I thought that I'd take a break in the midst of grading some essays, and because it is Sunday morning, and it is the first Sunday, and as I muse around in my mind on usually what I did on the first Sundays was be at the church early, set up the communion tray, and so that we could commemorate in our minds and hearts again another month, another period of living life. And I want to take this Sunday morning just to, well, really Sunday afternoon, because I thought about it. I had to come to the website and do some work because I haven't done any real work in about a week. And I'm here alone grading papers and trying to get straightened up for the last week of summer school. And I thought that I'd talk about this because I was speaking with a Christian friend of mine about relationships and reality. And I was asking this friend of mine, does it seem plausible to you that in the Christian life, that if you get with a partner, let's say, you know, you find a woman that you want to be with for the rest of your life, or vice versa, all right, you ladies find a guy that you want to be with for the rest of your life, a person that you want to spend the rest of your days with, what kind of person would that be? And how would that relationship work? And what is the basis upon which that relationship is? I'm going to read a section to you taken from the Song of Solomon, starting with, I'm looking at Song of Solomon, chapter 3. Starting with verse 1, it says, on my bed, night after night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. I must rise now and go about the city, in the streets, and seek in the squares, that I must seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. And then it says, the watchman who makes the rounds in the city found me and said, have you seen him? And I said, have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I left them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held on to him and would not let go of him until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the room of her who conceived me. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. What is this? Now, I want to stop right there, because what I'd like to do is I'd like to go back to where we were before, as we go to the first part of the chapter, and we're looking at the beloved's fear of losing her lover. The king returns to Jerusalem, leaving his beloved at her home in the country, and it says the phrase all night long on my bed indicates that the experience that she was describing took place in a dream. Okay, when a person loves another person deeply, it is natural to fear losing him or her. Now, I disagree with this commentator, because if you really love a person and you're involved in a relationship of reality, you're not afraid of losing that love. That love, if it is genuine, if it is something spawned of God, and you know that it is. I was speaking with this Christian friend of mine, and I was speaking of my marriage to the lady that I was married to for 34 years. It was beautiful 34 years to me, but when I think back on it now, looking back in hindsight, no, there were times when I wanted Lucy to just come up to me and just give me the shoulder neck massages, and while she touched me with her hands to tell me that she loved me deeply, not just because I provided for her and the girls, not just because I came home every night, but that she loved me. Because there was a certain demand upon each of us to be transparent with each other and to love the other person to that degree. This is what I expected out of it. When it did not take place, I thought that that was normative. Because, trust me, for the years that I've counseled people in marital relationships and even in dating relationships, one of the biggest complaints that always came across my desk and to my mind was that, well, how do I know he loves me? How do I know that she loves me? So wouldn't you think that it would be advantageous before you would even correspond with the person to start off with a reality check? You know, the person has to come up to you and they have to automatically, okay. Now, when a person loves another person deeply, it is natural to fear losing him or her. I don't agree with that. If a person loves another person deeply, it is not natural to fear that you would lose them. I never thought that I would lose Lucy. Upon her dying, I lost her. But for her to walk away from me, and after we had children together, and to say that, okay, all of a sudden, I never loved you, and you were this, that's terrible. Unless something really was happening in the relationship that was disturbing. But when we find this expression, the repeated expression, the one that my heart loves, once in each of these four verses, reveal the deep depthness of her love for Solomon. In her dream, she went to a city, either a town near home in Jerusalem or something, this commentator says, to look for him, her love, you know, to whom her heart languishes and wants. But she was unsuccessful. And what I see in these verses here, because I was out somewhere last night, and a beautiful lady came up, and I was talking with a male Christian friend of mine. And I said, now, if you really want to see what beauty is, there's beauty standing behind you. And he looked behind, and the lady overheard me, and we were having a conversation. But I made it perfectly clear to the lady that I was just admiring her beauty, that I didn't love her. I didn't want to be with her. I didn't want to do anything like that, because that is really against my nature, to be with someone that I don't love to that degree. Offer to give me a massage. You know, offer to, you know, just don't look at me and smile like that. So what do we see here? We see something. She even asked the watchman, the man who guarded the city at night, if they had seen him. Apparently, they had not. And when she found him in her dream, she took him to her mother's house, the most secure place that she knew. I love the writing of scriptures because it makes it so real. Oh, look at verse 3. The watchman who makes the rounds in the city found me and said, have you seen him whom my soul's love? Whom my soul love? That's what she said to him. Now, when you look at the refrain in verse 5, and this is very interesting, because verse 5 reads like this, is, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. See, the king returns to Jerusalem here. And we have to really look at this and take a look at this. The refrain marks the end of the section of the courtship. All right? In the beginning of the a wedding section. So perhaps a wedding has been as a reward of the patience of the beloved on the beloved's part. Well, the commentator is guessing at this. But when you look at the wedding in chapter 3, verses 6 through chapter 5, verse 1, the wedding procession. Let's go there. Let's go to the wedding procession and check this out. It says, what is this coming up from the wilderness like columns of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all scented pouters of the merchant. Behold, it is a traveling couch of Solomon, 60 mighty men around it on the mighty men of Israel. All of them are wielders of the sword, experts in war. Each man has his sword at his side, guarding against the terrors of the night. King Solomon has made for himself a sedan chair from the timbers of Lebanon. And then it talks about the post of silver, because this is the wedding. This is because the lovers have found each other. I would think that before a person would even think about a wedding in this modern era, that they have to think about the relationship and the reality of it. Does the person love you? That person will express their love for you in such a unique way, and your love for them would never clash with them. Your differences are welcome. Your unfamiliarity with the person is a welcome expectation, and it doesn't bring frustration and bewilderment, because your love is pure. Your touch is like a divine touch. My love for God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit is yet very strong in me. I cannot help but to love God and to love what He does, because what He does is God is showing me love on a level now, on a level that is so beautiful. When you can, people, I'm telling you, when you really come to know God and to know what He wants to do in your life, and every relationship that you have with every, listen to me, every relationship that you have with every human being, and I've been saying it for years, is so transparent, is so you can see through it. There's no fear in love. Isn't that what John says? Because perfect love casts out all fear. Why would you, here you find a person, you says, well, I like them, but I don't know whether they love me. Ask them. They'll tell you the truth. You know, ask a person, could you stand the thought of being with me? I'm going to tell you, if I cannot stand the thought of being with a woman or a man or whoever, or even bro man, my dog, you know, if I could not stand the thought of that smelly, hairy, stinky hound, he would not be in my house, have me cleaning it and keeping it in shape, because a dog is a smelly, dirty animal that lives outside and brings the outside on the inside. So I have to constantly clean. I have to have a certain affection for the animal. I really do. Now, same thing is true with the human being. And so the realities of the relationship has to be based upon, you know, that the person has an affinity for you. You know, the person has to say things like, you know what? I like thinking about you. I like thinking about what we're going to do this afternoon. I like thinking of you visiting a city with me and seeing the sights. I recall once I was speaking with a lady that I was, seeing. And she was saying that she would like to go to Europe and she would like me to go with her like there. And I just told her, I says, I can't see myself doing that with you. I really can't, because I'm not feeling it. And she was offended. And I said, I don't know why you're getting offended. If I don't feel it, I don't feel it. And why would I waste my time knowing that I don't feel it? Knowing that God would not want that to take place. I don't want it to take place. I'm not feeling it. You only do something that you know that you deeply feel. This is relationships in reality. And of course, we're going to bring the Bible in this, because, you know, the Bible accentuates this, you know, these kinds of truth serums. You know, be truthful with the person. Tell them. And I remember one woman said, you're so cruel. No, I'm not cruel. I'm telling you the truth. Don't you want that? She didn't want the truth. She wanted me to lie. Why would I get involved in something like that? Why? And most people that you come in contact with today are like that. Now, we as Christians are not supposed to be that. We're supposed to be people of the way, people that tell the truth. I'm not feeling you, baby. I don't want to be with you. Well, who are you feeling? Number two, that's none of your business. I'm not feeling you. Another suggestion that I would put on the forum, don't tell people about your feelings for other people. Why? Simply because it is none of their business. If you don't have feelings for them, what are you talking to them about people that you have feelings for and what those feelings are like? You need to discover whether those feelings are a relationship that is dealing with reality or the same old kind of message you've been putting up with for years, and you end up single and alone, heartbroken, starting all over again. You know, I got this marriage counseling page over there, and if you listen to those statements where I'm making statements about marriage, you can be blessed by that. You can choose anyone you want to. I haven't been on the marriage counseling page in a while, but I'm sure that the hit count has gone up since the last time I went to it. But if you want to know about relationships and marriage, you can go there. But you can listen to this. Find out what that person is like. Find out who they are. Find out if, and because, get this, because if that person doesn't match your personality, if that person doesn't match your, all right, let me give you a good example. All right, you find this person and you think they're adorable. Oh my God, look at him. He is so fine. What does that mean? That means he's going to give me pretty babies. Okay, all right. You and him are going to make some pretty babies together. That's not going to hold you together, baby. That is not going to hold you together. A pretty face is not going to hold you together. You better look and see what that person is like in the real world. Reality within that relationship is more than just pretty genes and chromosomes. And that don't mean nothing. You know, I'm telling this new young man that I'm mentoring now. I said, oh, you good-looking boy. You a good-looking dude, all right. I said, and you're not going to have no problems in that. I said, but you're going to have a lot of problems trying to discover what genuine affection is towards you than the superficial fleshly thing. I said, because their generation is having so much flesh sex that there's no way for them to know in reality what love is all about. And I'm telling you, after you've had sex with as many people as these people in this generation is having sex with, you definitely cannot know what true affection and love is all about. True affection and love happens when the person that is really doing a reality check just sends you a message and says, you know, I miss your presence. Heck, you know you're hitting on something this vital, because the person says that I miss your presence. See, Lucy knew when I was in the house, because when I was in the house, if she was sad, happiness was always around her, because I've never been a man that spawned unhappiness. I've never been that way. I'm always reeking of happiness. I remember once I was seeing a lady. This is years after Lucy passed away, and she used to love dancing with me. And I would dance with her, and she says, oh my goodness. I said, what? She says, the touch of your hands and the way you twirl me around. And I said, yes, but there's something that I was lacking. There was no return. I wasn't feeling her. I said, we can't dance anymore. I can't see you anymore. You're not loving me in the way that you ought to love me. Why? You're not loving me in reality. You're trying to love me attached to something that I have no connection with. She was connected to someone in the past that she was trying to relive with me. That's no. That's not a relationship in reality. You know what, you're headed for disaster when that happens. And when you spot that, you have to let the person know. And no, you know me better than that. No, I did not have doggy sex with this person. I don't do that. It takes time for that contact of a reality check to settle in, even in the mind and the hearts of Christians, because we're people also. We're no different from the non-Christian person. We want a pure and lasting relationship, and I'm telling you to look at it far deeper than the way you've looked at it. And don't listen to anyone in the church. Don't listen to any Christian friend, and for you to piggyback off of their relationship and try to do it the way that they're doing it, because it is just between you and the person that you're with. It is just between them. It happens in any relationship. It is between you and that person that you're currently with. I was telling a friend of mine, I said, if God has so granted that you have found a person that makes you very happy, a person that can give you a neck massage, a person that could comfort you, that's a blessing, and that's a wonderful thing to have. And I told the person, you relish in that, and you try to back that up with reciprocation. In other words, you give that same kind of love back to the person, and to remain transparent with them and to be truthful. And if you have questions towards something that may appear to be ambiguous, the way they're responding to you, you can ask them. Ask them in spirit and in truth. And if they truly love you and like you, they will say, as I had recently a person say to me, I am missing you. And that was just so like that person to say that to me. I am missing you. That's what you want. That is relationship and reality. When the person says, I'm missing you. And it has nothing to do with how much money you have. It has nothing to do with what you do. It has nothing to do. It means that there is a connection. And this connection is more than just a physical attraction. When the person says that I miss you. Now, what does that you mean? The you in reality. When I say, no, I don't want to go there. The person says, I knew you'd say that. And I don't even respond back. And the person says, well, I guess you got to figure out where we want to go. You're trying to control things again. And so I said, no, I'm not trying anything. I am being me. Now check this out. The person just smiles or giggles. And they like that because they need a person like me to take control of certain things at times, because that person is out of control. See what I'm talking about? And I know that they're out of control, but my affection for them so supersedes anything else. And that's why they said, I miss you. See what I mean? This is, and I'm talking to you like that because as Christians, we are not to be driven by flesh. We are not to be driven by that. That is ridiculous. We're driven by truth. And you know, when you preach like that, you can give the Bible verses. You know, let love be without hypocrisy. You know, we can read that. Okay, let every man speak truth with his neighbor. We can read those verses, can't we? Book of Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Romans, 1st, 2nd Corinthians. Man, we can read all of that. The book of Acts, the history of the Christian church. But buddy, 2,000 years after that was written, if you don't have that standing right in front of you, the reality check looking right at you, so you get my drift. It's very important for you to realize that. Very important. I miss you. Boy, that was the best thing that a person could say to me that they miss my presence. And you know why I say that? Because, you know, you like to think that. As a matter of fact, I had a male church member come by and he asked me, was I ever going to basically, you know, come back to visiting, you know, the church? And I said, most likely not. And he asked me why, and I said, I might reasons. I don't want to be around people that, and I'm not speaking about everybody, but I don't like to be in the presence of people that don't like to be in my presence but won't tell me. See what I mean? See what I mean? Because relationships in reality is that you got to tell the person, you know what? I don't like you. Tell a person that. And then trust me, for the rest of your life, I will never be around you because I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. I only want to be around people that says, I miss your presence. You see what I mean? Those are the individuals that I spend my time with. And you will alleviate so many problems in your life because your relationships will be based upon reality and not stupidity and not some fond acquaintance that you hope exists. I often thought over the years, I says, how could, and my wife accused me of that. She would tell me, she says, sometimes I think you love the people in the church far more than you love me. And I asked her, honestly, how could you say that? And she said, the amount of time that you spent with them as compared with me, she had me. And when I really thought about it, thought about the relationship in reality, I did not know how to be with her because she was not the kind of expressive person that I married that could express her lack of ambivalence about me. She would show her disdain for me. Oh, I got to say this, and I'm not speaking about my wife that is years passed away. But we would go on vacations together and there would be, you know, I hear about other people going on vacations together and how wonderful it is to be with your mate. Well, I was chauffeuring her around. She enjoyed it. I was working. I was a guy that had to make sure everything was just right. I was working. Even when the family went on a vacation, I never had a chance to enjoy myself. Now I do as a single man. I get $200 or $300 to spare if I'm working, and I like to leave town and just have a holiday away by myself. Just by myself and just enjoy myself. So refreshing. I love doing that. And what makes it better is when you find someone that says, I really appreciate your presence. Wow. Now, some of you as Christians may say, oh, well, if you found a person like that, are you thinking about marrying them? Because you can't have that kind of transparency without marriage. I would say to you, says who? Says who? You don't need to get married to have this. This should be the kind of transparency that happens with any true relationship of love. Now, you know, you talking about having sex and all that kind of stuff, yeah, you should think about making a commitment to this person, especially if you have that kind of a relationship. But I'm talking about the kind of relationship that makes me feel good that when a person tells me that they miss my presence. And they, man, that's enough. That gives me a rush. That's wonderful. Because nobody's lying to each other. There's no ulterior motives. Person isn't after my money, nor am I after their money, if they have money. If a lady said, John, I said, what? I like you, and I'd like you to be my chaperone to take me out to dinner and stuff like that and just spend time with me. As a man would with an older, mature-ish woman, would you like that? I said, hey, if our spirits vibe, but if it don't, no. Because I'm going to say something and you're not going to understand why I'm saying it, and then you're going to go off on a tizzy. And I'm going to say, you know, you don't have the right. And I'm saying, you know, I just tell you, right. We don't have the right to that. We didn't make that kind of commitment to each other. So it's just something that I want you to think about. You know, you talk to God about in your lives. I've been talking 30 minutes. That's enough. I got more essays to grade here on Sunday. And I want to apologize for not doing a webcast in the past couple of days. Been very busy, very busy. See, I'm still trying to juggle this. I'm trying to finish up this summer class and enjoy what's left of my summer before I go back to work. And it's moving very, very rapidly. Trust me. Well, listen, it has been absolutely wonderful. I'm glad that you're coming to my site and listening to me on this first Sunday. Remember, worship the Lord. Ask Him to forgive you, as I do. Ask Him to guide you. And pray for someone else besides yourself and your family and your friends. Pray for the person that's unemployed. I had to give some hard, cold facts to my sister in Chicago. And if you got kids, you know, if times are getting rough and you got kids and your kids are not loving you enough to take care of, you know, food needs in your life, you need not call and ask somebody else in your family. I had to tell my sister that. I said, you have two grown children. You have no business need of food with those children that are well over 22 and 23 years old. I said, if you have to ask anybody else for anything, that's a pretty shameful thing. And I told my sister that. I said, it's not that I don't have some dollars that I could send you, but I'm not going to do it because you have two grown children and you need to tell them. And I said, or you need to let me have their numbers so I will tell them what they should do. And I told my sister, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. We were not raised that way. Now, I know that's rather old-fashioned, and you think, well, you don't know another person's condition. If I had children and if I were hungry, I would call Delia or Leslie and say, you know what? And let me tell you this, I've never had to call my children for being hungry. Never in my life. God is good. But if I call them and say, baby, I haven't eaten in 2 or 3 days, and I need it. They will come back here and slap me and give me a couple of $100 and fill the house up with food and tell me, don't give it to this boy. You eat this food. You my daddy. See, we're living in terrible times when a child won't even take care of their own parent, and we need to come back to those principles. But here again, we're talking about responsible relationships and reality, aren't we? God bless you. Thank you for coming to my site. I'd love to hear some of your comments, and I appreciate you. God bless. You know the drill. Stay in the Word.